Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, we're Fed Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 2. NASDAQ Futures down 5,750. We got the CPI coming out this morning, which will be a big number. The question is if there's any tariff implications. Are there going to be at all there yet this month? My guess is you'll see just a little bit of influence this month, but not that much, because I think the CPI somehow has a 3 or 4 or 5 month lag, and I never could figure out why, but seems to me that it always has. And then you got the specter of, if it's a bad number, who gets fired by our dictator in chief. But that's another story. Carl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. That CPI data has always been several months behind, and
why do you think it is? I can't figure it out.
Oh, that's not. I mean, for goods, for anything that's in goods, that's not hard to figure out at all. You can actually see the trend that's going to show up in the CPI and the PPI as it goes through the various phases of production. So, and that tends to be fairly good in terms of predictive value. It's not perfect like anything else, but it does correlate, and the correlation tends to be pretty good. So, I mean, over 2-3 decades of watching this stuff, I would say that what's been in the PPI is going to show up in the CPI, and that has indicated that there is an impact coming here. But here's, I think one
well,
of the,
back
the,
back up just a second. I mean,
yeah.
Because I, by the way, I'm with you on that, but I'm curious. We just happen to have somebody on the show whose mother actually did stuff for CPI, Mike Murphy, and
yeah.
I'm curious how she would go out, pick a week, second week, where are we, August, second week in July,
right,
and goes to however many stores she went to, I don't know, and she had, what did Mike say, she had like 20 different things or whatever it was that she kept track of, whether it was, I forget what they were, but it was stuff in the grocery aisles.
Yeah.
And so she sends that in, and let's say July 20th.
Right.
What, I mean, I'm with you that there's a delay. I mean, there's no argument there. I'm saying, where does, if she sees it up 2% or down 2%, where does that hang until October? Why isn't it in this month, I guess, is my question.
Well, because it's, I don't, I mean, you've always got the sample delay. Just based upon the fact, I mean, it's like the employment report. Your third week, your third calendar week is sample week, right? So, but the report comes out, 2 weeks later, typically. So, I mean, there's that.
So you're thinking we're getting her April or May number now, which I sort of can't.
No, we ought to be getting the July number.
That's what I'm saying. I don't see where the delay is.
Well, it's in theory, it's not. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was that there are people now rumbling around saying, "Hey, wait a minute! Since the BLS data has been the funny thing is, of course, they all put it in the context of Trump. Since Trump fired the BLS chick." Because the data was crap.
No, because he wants to be in charge of everything.
Well, he's I'm saying that's what what he said.
Yep.
Okay, that all of a sudden that this means that the CPI data is crap. Well, I got news for you. The BLS data has been crap the entire time. I mean, I dubbed that that department, the Bureau of Lies and Scams, 30 years ago. All right. I mean, it, just because, it, and by the way, it had nothing to do with political affiliation. It just had to do with the fact that the ADP report, ADP count, can count paychecks. Okay. I mean, you know, back in the day, I mean, nowadays it's all EFT files that are submitted.
Yeah, I got a question for you, buddy.
But the thing is that, I mean, you know, it used to be PIN-fed paychecks, right? Out of a box.
Well, okay.
And, yeah, the first
regarding,
thing
was
this.
Sorry to interrupt, but regarding ADP, it's a question I think listeners might want. Well, I want an answer, if you have one. If it's PTI Securities or Carl Inc., whatever your firm used to be,
right?
And we both had 50 employees. The next year, we decided to go with 20 additional. I'll use them temporary employees, 1099 people. Does ADP issue that check, or do we, or you?
ADP, if you, okay. So if you do, if you use them for payroll. Okay. Now, we never did, but I know
we do. We do, by the way.
Well, I know many people that did. They essentially have draft authority on the account that, you know, that issues payroll. All
right. Right.
Now, you know, most businesses have a segregated account that issues payroll. And, you know, lots of very good reasons to do that. That normally doesn't have any money in it. But, you know, the day before payroll, all the payroll goes in there, right? and that's, you know, obviously you want some kind of internal controls over that, and so that's, you know, that's normally how that's done. But that is, you know, that's where they draft from, all right? So, and, but they issue the individual payments to the, you know, to the employees.
Right,
now,
right.
You know, in the day, those were physical checks.
Well, some people still get them.
Well, I don't know that very many people do. I mean,
well, you're a high tech guy. I ain't with regular people.
I know. I'm just saying. I mean, you know, God, when you know when Sarah first you know got her first job, they you know, the place that she went to work for was, you know, was all over her to direct deposit her paychecks, and at the time she didn't have a bank account, for crying out loud. You know, so I mean, so
maybe that's why they couldn't pay her.
Well, so down to the credit union we go, right, to, you know, to resolve that problem. So she had somewhere for the, you know, for the money to go. But yeah, I mean, that was, so I don't know how many physical checks they still cut, but certainly they can count them. And the BLS has, you know, their numbers have never had decent correlation with ADPs.
Well,
never.
There's no government, and my question, and I don't.
Well, I understand.
Was probably,
that
the question was probably crummy.
Government is split out.
I know, but
in the BLS data,
right, if PTI has our 50 people,
right,
and one day we want to do something with our, you know, suppose we had a huge system in house, which we don't. I mean, we use other people's, and we wanted to hire super high tech guy Carl to make sure we had a firewall on it. And you come here and for 2 weeks, and at the end of 2 weeks, we owe you $10,000, or whatever. I'm going to say my brother writes you a check that doesn't go through ADP.
Right.
So if all of a sudden people started using more temporary workers, that's, I'm not saying a weakness in ADP, but they don't pick it up either.
Yeah, that's not going to show up. Although, well, that officially at a government level. Isn't going to appear until somebody files an estimated tax return, probably.
Or up to 1099 come January.
Well, 1099 January is, it gets reconciled.
Yeah.
But the EFTPS deposit, I mean, you could still do that one with a paper check, but you know, the IRS would, by the way, if they ever screw one of those up, oh my God, you're way better off doing it electronically now. Even though you still can physically send them a check.
If they're liable to lose it, then you got a problem.
Well, I've had that happen, okay, where they didn't lose it. They cashed it, and they put it on the wrong account. And let me tell you something. If that ever happens to you, you...
Can't you send them the
chief
photograph of it? I mean, I know I'm dealing with the IRS, but...
Chief, believe, let me inform you that that people with an IQ greater than 40 don't work at that agency.
I've had actually pretty good luck with those guys.
Well, I have had this happen, okay? Now, it was a number of years ago with an actual tax payment where they cashed the check. Now, this was back when we used to physically get checks back, okay? They cashed the check. So, of course, I didn't think anything was wrong because I had long reconciled my bank account, right? And I had the canceled check in my hand with the stamp on the back of it from the IRS. And then 2-3 months later, I start getting these threatening letters that they're going to garnish my bank accounts, and they're going to, you know, they're going to do this and they're going to do that because I didn't pay my taxes. Da, 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 da. Of course, I filed the taxes, which is how they knew how much, you know, I owed them, right? Supposedly.
Yeah.
It took me a month to get that straightened out. And I had a physical copy of the check in my hand. I had the physical
really?
Check.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get
okay.
It.
And getting them to actually admit that they had cashed it and put it in the wrong place and find it and fix it was a nightmare.
One of the guys in the office, his refund check is in the wind.
And, yeah, well, this is, I mean, just believe me when I tell, and I've got another story about those guys back in the 2000 time frame, too, that, or, yeah, 2000 time frame, that's even worse in terms of them issuing a check that is not actually owed to somebody because somebody tried to do something hinky and getting them to stop doing that because, you call them, I'm like, I'm not cashing this isn't mine. And it's enough that you'd think that, you know, the black SUVs will show up in your driveway if you do cash it, right? And so, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, you send it back. You send it back, and then 2 weeks later, you get another one.
when we talk about the delay.
I'm just saying, yeah. But, Chief, this is the level of intelligence and operational integrity that exists throughout the government. So
Back up, got 40-some years, if everybody wants to do that. As you well know, and I think some of the listeners I talk about too much, I was so involved in the price movements back when I was at Pullman because I was essentially the inflation guy.
Well, sure. But anyone that runs, I ran a much smaller company, okay, but anyone that's not paying attention to stuff that's running a business is nuts.
Well, if you didn't have a contract that was... an escalation clause, you went broke.
Well, yeah, during that time.
But here's what I'm saying. It was a different view of what we're going to hear today, because if these numbers are bad, we're all going to hear is Trump all day long, you know, BSing about
it. Yeah.
But in those days, nobody, I think Nixon was president, nobody complained about the number, ever. It was, if it came out 1% a month, I never heard anybody, and I was right in the middle of it. I never heard anybody say, oh, man, this number should be 2% or it should be 0.2%. But the thing that was odd even then is when Volcker came in and started doing his stuff, I think it gave him, you know, I could maybe write a pamphlet on why I think it gave him license to basically put the savings loans out of business. He didn't have to. But even when Dr. J, I remember one night we're driving home because we just started trading. We're driving home together. We live in the same place. And I go, John, do you see any inflation? He goes, no, it seems, this is like, you know, 4 months and near the end of when Volcker was doing this. I go, there isn't any. I mean, but the numbers still kept percolating out that there was. Because whatever, Carl, you and I are agreeing on it, I go, we can't put our finger on why. There's always been this 4, 5, 6 month wind up or wind down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we saw it during COVID. It took how many months to wind up before he actually, because Powell's talking about, there wasn't any, right? Of a sudden, there it was. But the weird part of it was, if you were to say, you see these talking heads all the time, but to me, don't know what the hell they're talking about, talk about wage push inflation.
Yeah.
There has never been, except for maybe those 6 months, anything remotely resembling wage push inflation. Now, and you're going to say, why the hell was that? And I said, because actually, people were still getting raises.
Right.
Based on a lagging CPI when none of the prices were going up. So you actually had, I'm going to say it was 6 months, Carl, probably more like 4 or 5. There was a 6 month period in our lifetime where there actually was wage push inflation. All the rest of the time, the price of the hamburger was up long before the cook gets his raise.
Yeah.
I mean, am I right on that or not? I mean, there's
no, you're right. And the thing is, but I mean, you look at what's going on right now. All right, you have this, you know, there's this whole, you know, inflation has cooled, you know, rubric, right, that's been running around. Okay, well, explain to me why I have, well, not anymore. I just cooked the last one recently. 99 cents a pound pork butts. All right, and by the way, they were bought on sale.
But now the sales are what? $1.49, $1.39?
No, $2.49.
Really? Oh, okay. There's still some around here. You can get them on a Sunday morning early for maybe $1.40 or something.
Well, all right, but you know,
they were 99. You're right. They were 99.
Yeah, they were 99 cents a pound. All right, now at $2.49 on sale.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, nowhere in the CPI table, because, you know, the granularity on that CPI table is pretty good. If you dig into it, you know, you go down past the headline and you actually read the whole table.
It's so detailed, it's scary.
It's stupidly scary.
Yeah.
But nowhere is whole pork roasts, nowhere in that data does it show that price paid is actually up well more than a double, okay? And yet it is. And that is not an isolated incident. By the way...
Okay, well, you got to tell the whole story here. Why, over the last 10 years, with all this incredible inflation we've had, pork didn't go up basically at all until the last 2 months?
Well,
what's unique about the pork industry where beef has gone up to the moon?
Chief, so here's the thing, and this is why I say these sampling methodologies are deliberately intended to screw you. All right, and this is by design, and it has always been this way. The sticker price on that pork butt was never 99 cents.
Right.
It was always $1.90 or $1.50.
Correct.
Or, you know, whatever, right? The problem is that the sale price, the actual ticket price, when you get to the front of the store and you check out, that isn't what gets sampled.
I get it. Okay.
When you go, when the person goes in there and takes that sample, what they're looking at is not the coupon or whatever, you know, sale price. What they're looking at is the sticker price, which is not the price you pay. And most people, when they go to the grocery store, right, I certainly do it, I don't know anyone who doesn't do it, looks at the stuff that's on sale that week or that day, if you're in the, you know, the Friday bin or whatever, and they selectively shift their purchases at the point of purchase to take advantage of those discounts.
Right.
I certainly do it. I don't know anybody that doesn't.
That's why I'm there early in the morning. Myers, the store up by Audrey has, they must be like a key store for the area because all the stuff that's on discount, they pile in there early in the morning.
I'm just saying, yeah. I don't know anybody that doesn't do that. All right, I go Friday morning.
How could you not? Well, the only way you don't is if you only eat certain things and you go to the store for a certain item.
Right.
Where I like everything. I mean, if I'm going to have vegetables, I just look for the, hey, if broccoli's on sale, I have broccoli. I don't care. I mean,
I'm just saying, if I got Brussels sprouts on sale, broccoli's not, well, I like both of them. I might
lay off the Brussels sprouts. I'm not huge on those.
Well, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, that's among the things I like to eat. This one's on sale, this one's not. Guess which one gets bought, right? And I mean, that, I don't know anybody that doesn't shop that way. All right, and yet absolutely zero attention is paid to this within the way that the sampling is done.
I always get charged out of the people who go to the butcher where it's all laid out perfectly, and obviously there's people's work involved, and you'll see these, you know, the really nice thick cut boneless pork chops that are like, you know, $5.80 a pound or something.
Yeah.
And right in the next cooler, you get the whole pork loin for $1.99 a pound. All you do is cut it yourself.
Right.
Duh. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, obviously, I won't say nobody, but I'm too lazy to cut the chicken breasts off the thing. If I want boneless chicken breasts, I'm going to buy them boneless, right? but I'm not too lazy to cut a pork loin. even I can do that, you know.
Yeah, hello. How hard's that? Right?
How hard is that? What do you make of, you know, a lot of these, this stuff is sort of clashing here, and we have, you know, people pointing fingers virtually everywhere. And I don't know, it seemed like it's harder and harder. Now we have, you know, National Guard. We have people, you know, trying to get their own stormtroopers, for God's sake, in my mind. I've never seen anything quite like this. What are we disguising? We can't focus on anything at all, it doesn't appear.
Well, I, you know, here's the... Okay, two basic things that I've pointed this out to, you know, since I've been on your show, okay? And there, the ugly monster under the surface of the water is starting to eat the tourists at this point.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's getting harder to ignore the fact that you know, every 50 feet there's another chum slick, right? And you're like, hey, where'd that come from? Oh, I didn't see nothing. You know, there's no sea monster. Uh-huh. Right. Go swimming? I don't think so. Here's the two things that are reality is that, you know, Trump is out crowing about the tariff revenue that he's getting, right, and expects to continue to get it along with Bessent, okay? You look at the MTS, and in fact, the tariff revenue is very substantial at this point. I mean, we're talking about, you know, $30-40 billion a month. That's not chicken feed, right? That's, I mean, you're talking about the old $300-400 billion a year.
Why,
right?
Do people believe him when he says the foreign people are paying that?
Okay, look, taxes are taxes, revenue is revenue, spending is spending. Okay. Yes, the revenue is going up, right, by that amount. There's the MTS, it shows it. The problem is the spending is going up faster.
what are we accomplishing
by the way, the deficit is expanding, even though the tariff revenue is in fact increasing. All right, now the problem with this is that's inflation. That there's your Friedman immortal line again.
Yep.
Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. Duh. Okay. And so you have these people running around within the government believing that there is a free lunch. There is no free lunch. The second problem, and this is the other one I've been hammering on for the last couple of decades, is that you can never solve, I don't care how you do it. And by the way, all this crap about interest rates, you know, Trump screaming, oh, they need to come down, da da da. You have some Fed governors now saying, well, you know, there is a case for cutting, you know, 2-3 times this year, da da da. Look, you cannot solve a cost problem with a financing scheme. And oh, by the way, insurance is a financing scheme. Okay, I don't care what the issue is. If the problem is that the price is too high, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, whether it's whatever have you, you cannot solve that problem with any kind of financing scheme, because nobody works for free. And at the end of the day, what this boils down to is, if you are trying to solve a cost problem with a financing scheme, what you are doing is handing the end consumer a gun and telling him he can shove it up someone else's butt and threaten to kill them unless they pay his bill. Okay?
Yeah, well, yeah.
So you got these people yelling about, for example, the latest thing that I just saw a couple days ago is the AMA is now screaming that the student loan limits in the big bag of barf is going to basically screw people who want to be doctors. Excuse me. The reality, let's say that a newly minted doctor just got his MD, can make $200,000 a year.
Okay, that's not enough to pay. It's not enough to pay off loans.
Well, that's not a bad ticket though, right? You'd think, right? All right. Let's say that he can make $200,000 a year. Okay, I can back calculate given a 5-year horizon. By the way, skill sets change over time. Therefore, if you can't pay for it within 5 years, you got problems, because you're going to end up getting screwed with the continuing requirements to learn in order to stay on top of whatever the field is. I don't care if it's computer science or it's doctors. All right, I can back calculate that, and I assume that somebody can put 10% of their gross income into covering the financing costs. And if I do this over a 5-year period, what I come up with is that the cost of that degree, the end-to-end cost, cannot exceed about $80,000.
Well,
or it doesn't work.
But you also have, and again, we got to dash here, because I think we have Joel, but we will in a little bit anyway. The whole thing is so screwed up, Carl. I mean, I'm not as close to this as you are, but I see all these people going to the, as I have friends going to hospitals a lot now, and I look at what they're paying and what the people are making, and right now the AMA probably deserves to be pissed off, because that doctor probably is going to be doing 300 procedures a year that somebody's going to get billed $200,000 for, and he's going to make $200,000.
Chief, I sent you that thing from the person who had an ER so-called bill.
Actually,
right?
I didn't see that.
Oh, well, all right. Well, let me explain to you what it was. It's a roughly $1,500 bill where the actual amount paid by everybody, the insurance company and the person, was $178.
How'd that work out?
Well, here's the thing. If you send me that, you give me that, and this has been going on for a long time. If you give me that, what you've just done is admitted to a felony.
Sure.
Okay? You as the hospital, the physician, everybody involved in that scheme, from the top down, I don't care who it is and I don't care what the excuse is, every single person that participated in that, by sending out that bill to me, you have admitted to committing a criminal felony. And every single one of those people needs to go to prison right now.
There still are people in this world that will pay that bill. Generally,
Chief, I understand that. Otherwise, it wouldn't be sent, right?
Quick story before we go to Joel. Remember way back, we first started the show, Frank Fahey used to help us out before he kind of retired. Frank's an interesting guy. And somehow his wife knows this old dude who's in the hospital, and he gets his bill for like $25,000. And it did, you know, this is part of his, you know, what the insurance paid, and this was his copay or something. One of those deals where you had to pay like 20% of the bill or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he says, what's he going to do? He's going to get a second mortgage on a house, pay the bill. Frank goes, wait a minute. Let me check this out. He went through it, and he knew somebody else that just had kind of the same procedure. Right. And went to the hospital, had knocked the thing down for the insurance company or whatever. So he calls the hospital, and he says, what are you guys doing? I mean, this is crazy. This is another. Evidently, the guy sent him $1,000, and they were happy.
Yeah, well, you know.
So
what?
I mean, the dude was going to send him $25,000 and remortgage his house.
Chief, no, what he needed to send him was a shotgun.
Well, I get that, but I'm saying this is happening all over the place.
Yes, I know, and it's been going on for 20 years.
Real quick, stupid question, and maybe I think Kenny will be on there. But if not, by the way, would you mind if I know you're hanging around. When Hal's on, if this number is a real jaw dropper, how about piling back on?
Yeah, I can hang on. I have to go reload my espresso before that number comes out, I think.
Well, let me ask you this real quick, and then we won't do break. Let's go right to Joel.
He's not up yet.
If somebody has insurance where they pay 20% of the bill.
Yeah.
Now,
by the way, that's traditional Medicare.
Okay, but I'm saying, but now a lot of your other policies are
right.
These are people in Obamacare that can nowhere near afford the 20 or 25%. So, I mean, why are you going there? I have no idea. But they are. What makes you think or me think that if the insurance company has a quote deal, they'll call it a network, I guess. Network sounds better than a deal, right? A deal with the hospital that they're not sending you the gross amount while the insurance company's paying the negotiated amount. Why do I think that if the total, if the list price is 100 and the insurance is paying 40, then I might be getting 20% of the 100, not 20% of the 40. Why am I that suspicious?
By the way, not only that, how do you think the insurance company set the deductible up so they don't actually pay anything?
Yeah.
And by the way, that's like an every insurance company common thing. That's how they're all doing it right now.
I had a talk about personal crap. We used to, we had more people, we had one of those HSA things, right?
Yeah.
Health savings plan, and it was one of
They screw with you on that one too.
But that was one of the best, and this was one of the ones where you carried it over. So essentially, it was like another IRA.
Right.
So you had to put $5,000 a year into the thing that was tax deductible, and then as time went by, the deductible was like $5,000. Right. So after 3 years, I got nothing. All of a sudden, I got $15,000 in here, and I go, wow, this thing's doing better than my IRA. Right.
Right.
So the next year, I end up having like three procedures, not procedures, just tests. I mean, I don't have an ankle or whatever, nothing serious. And so for my doctor to refer me to the specialist, who says, oh boy, you need an MRI. Oh, by the way, go to Northwestern and get your MRI. They were, between the specialist and the MRI, all three of them came out exactly at like $4,900.
Isn't that interesting?
And so at the end of the year, I got zero in my account. Insurance company never paid a dime. These guys are—they're so smart. They outsmarted me so much. I felt like the third grade with the dunce hat on.
Yeah. All right, Joel's up. Let's let him have his turn.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Sorry about that abrupt exit last week. Locked the wife out of the house. I thought she was
I thought it was the lottery showed up with your check.
No, she was out. I thought she was gone, and she was out walking the dog. So.
Oh, God. Well, you locked the dog out, too, then.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do that. But how you doing today, Chief?
Doing good. Well, I'm waiting for this number, and I'm waiting to see who gets fired if it's a bad number. But I think some of the tariff stuff is going to have to leak through. I don't see how it isn't, but we'll see.
You know what? We keep saying that, you know what it is? We keep saying that there's this, you know, possible slowdown from this. But, see some evidence of it. I just tell you, it's this market. It's just at this point, they're still buying dips, and the rips are being sold. I mean, there hasn't been like that sell everything kind of day, you know, where they let everything go. I think one of the most concerning things to me in the market right now is the performance of the staples. Not so much yesterday, but last week they had one heck of a week, and that's not something, you know, that's not where you want to see your leadership at. So that's one concerning thing to me. As far as the CPI number goes, Chief, I mean, revisions, like you said, yeah. Like if someone gets fired, as long as we're staying around 2.5-3%, I don't think there's a lot of worry. But once again, revisions and also, who knows, you know, the changing complexion of the Fed.
Well, the thing I'm concerned about, and I'll kind of fire back at you a little bit, I think somehow or another, even though you and I, maybe most people in the industry other than me, I'm probably a little less than this, but you can't help yourself but saying everything must be good because the market's up. And I think at the end of the day, how did that work in October or September of 1929. I mean, the market is because of when you see something like Nvidia or Microsoft, and Apple. You know, Trump cuts a deal with Apple. Things up $20. It's $140 billion in market cap, 70 of which is marginable. We talk about making money in terms of available. And that's how many. That's how much money is available. If that was at PTI, somebody wanted to buy $70 billion worth of stock. And our $140 billion new, you know, valuation Apple, guess what? We buy the stock for it. I mean, it's an incredible movement of wealth in a narrow area. It doesn't mean that your restaurant and your manufacturing firm got a new contract. I mean, look at the incredible shoot up in cryptocurrency that you can now borrow against. I mean, the waves of, I did something really stupid until I went back and did a real deep dive on the tulip part, right? The tulip thing down in the Holland, where tulips got to be so incredibly expensive. And the point was, if everybody just bought the tulips with essentially cash money and ran them up, it's like no big deal. They just go right back down. But everything is paid for. So even though the people who bought at the top, you know, and you know, got their ass kicked basically. Wasn't good for them. There's no real danger there. Then all of a sudden they started to get, the tulips got listed on the then exchanges, which again wasn't so bad. All of a sudden you got to borrow against them. And as soon as you were able to margin essentially the worthless tulip, all of a sudden things got out of hand, and it wasn't a couple of years before they crashed. It was a few years, I think. The same thing is going on, and you could make the comparison between that and these fake currencies. It's one thing if everybody wants to buy a bunch of Bitcoin and run it up, it's fine. All of a sudden, people are margining their Bitcoin. Now, therein lies the rub, if there's a rub. And that's the stuff that's making me pretty darn nervous. Actually, I saw a podcast the other day, and yeah, you know, I don't ever, it seems like everybody who does one, not us, because we have all kinds of different people on, but the person does it on his own, you can sure tell their agenda. But this guy brought out like 4 points, and one of them is all the margin that is now not even being used, but is available to where it's so different than the rest of society. But he also was saying having a huge slew of more than 1% moves during a day, up and down or up, is never been a precursor to market health. And I forget what the other two were, but it was, you know, you look at it, that doesn't mean you should sell, but it was interesting that he picked out 4 points, a couple of which I hadn't thought of. Now, of course, you don't watch a guy who's bullish on the market, and he's going to think of a couple things you didn't think of, and that's why I watch him. I don't try and get their conclusion, but it is danger to me that there's all kinds of margin now. We're up to $2 trillion in cryptocurrency, in wealth. That's kind of a lot.
Well, what's gonna trigger the reverse?
There's been the question through the ages, right? But something always does. And I have a feeling that Carl might be right, or I think it has to do probably with every government being broke. I don't know what happens. They're all in this together, but if the long term rates and Trump wants the Fed to lower the short term rates, which they can do a little bit. They actually, by the way, are trying their hardest to do it now with the money supply going up 7%. But if all of a sudden the market, who I still think is bigger than the government's, but maybe it isn't. All of a sudden the market goes, man, this looks like 2% inflation. I want or 5% inflation or 8. I want 10% for my 10-year bonds. Then they got a real problem. That's what happened in the late 70s. That's something that nobody can deal with if it happens. Because all of a sudden now, what are you going to do? You're going to have to raise taxes. How are you going to cover this debt if the long-term rates are 8%, that's the big axe hanging over.
Grow your way out of it, Chief. Your way out.
How are you gonna do that by telling people from overseas not to come here, basically? I mean, how are you gonna do that by trying to put other countries out of business when world trade is the one thing that's caused the growth of the last 40 years? Now, could it have been done?
You know what the problem with your thesis is?
Oh, it's me.
Common sense.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anything you've learned in this market, you know, or I guess, you know, people can peg different periods of time and, you know, attribute different things to different reasons and stuff. And I'm not even going to go under the surface of, you know, some of the most recent things that have been going on, because they're so unprecedented that I haven't been able to digest the information nor the potential impact of some of the actions that have been taken lately.
What's your knee-jerk reaction to the government getting a piece of sales for these companies to help them make deals? I've never seen anything like that.
Are you reading my mind again, Chief?
I think we think alike a lot of ways.
How about the move in Apple last week?
Yeah, they cut a deal. Yet, you know, I don't see how a government agreement can make NVIDIA, that's got $6 a share revenue, make it. How are you going to make it worth $300?
And now China wants to block those chips.
Yeah, because Trump made the deal. Then he said they were second class chips. Wait a minute, you just made the deal. Then you said they're horse bleep. Now China goes, we don't want them. I mean, this is like watching Ralph Cramden, for God's sake.
Come on, Chief Ralph Cramden. You think, what are you trying to bring back?
I'm saying it's like comedy. Listen to this stuff. oh yeah, we're going to cut the deal. You guys can have these ships. By the way, they're garbage. What? How do you,
Alice? Chief, I guess, and I guess I'll wrap it up on this. I'm not on True Social. I doubt you are.
Oh no, I don't.
But the unprecedented impact of moves and the things coming out of the administration is the only thing that really matters in the market right now.
Yeah,
and the latest flavor of the day is Intel.
Yeah.
You know, oh, the guy should resign. Oh, he's going to the White House. Oh, he's going to meet with the cabinet. So, I don't know how.
What is he doing meeting with the cabinet? What possible? Is he bringing a sack of?
Chief, don't ask me common sense questions anymore. Okay?
Well, has he got a suitcase full of money? What's he doing?
Chief, I don't know. What I've been trained to do is look at the markets, evaluate the information, and try and make, you know, best investment decision.
Without a doubt.
Very hard to do. But that's it for me today, Chief. I'm glad we got through this one. Always enjoy, you know, being on with you. So we'll chat again next week.
I think, Joel, you got to stay long, stay protected if you can do both.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, buddy. By the way, when am I coming back on your show?
I was just looking at the schedule, thinking about that. I'm gonna look for you. I think I'll send you something today. Okay.
All right, buddy, because it's a lot of fun. SP Futures down 5. The NFL Futures down 15. Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good.
Missed you last
you?
Week. You sound good.
Yeah. Thank you very much. No, I'm in New York. I was tied up last week, unavailable, but I'm good. I'm back in New York because I just filmed my Yahoo podcast yesterday, so I'm here for a couple of more days. I got meetings in television, and then I'm going home.
Okay, well, it's too hot to go out on the yacht anyway, you know.
What's going on?
What's going on? Everything's going on. Are you?
Yeah.
I mean,
so I was listening to your conversation about Lip Bhutan yesterday, going to the White House, and now he's going to meet everybody in the cabinet and try to sell his product and tell everyone that he's not, you know, he's not conflicted and it's all good. You know, whatever. I don't own Intel. I never owned Intel. You know, AMD and NVIDIA are other places I'd go if I had a choice between the three. Intel's not a name that I'd go to, but it is interesting to kind of see what's, you know, how he's trying to make his way there. But I don't really think it's going to turn to much, quite honestly.
Kenny, this is maybe something you don't want to answer, but it's a question because I value your opinion pretty much more than just about anybody's, to be honest with you. When Dr. J and I went to Europe to lecture in the early 1900s, 1991, we went to Austria and Germany.
Yeah.
And I got a glimpse of their economy versus ours.
Yeah.
Banks owning all the companies, banks having so much power, they had their nose so far stuck up the ass of government. It was a whole different, as Lewis branded it, it's a fascist economic system where everybody's beholden to government. Young people don't get to do anything until the old people like die, and then maybe they'll get a job. There was no sense of entrepreneurship whatsoever. Everybody who traded worked in a bank and did what the bank told them. There was no independent trader like you and I.
Right.
And when I left, even though I loved the people, you know, the guys are nice, the girls are terrific, and had a great time. I almost felt economically like I needed to take like 3 showers. I'm like, this can't be our future. I mean, it can't be our where everybody were. Everybody in any industry goes and sticks his ass up the president, his nose up the president's ass, and all of a sudden nobody can. How does nobody else can compete with them because they got to deal with the governments involved? They're getting a cut. I don't. How are we going down this road? I'm not talking about just the current guy in office. What are we doing here?
Yeah, you know, I find it. I'm assuming you're talking about the NVIDIA AMD deal yesterday, am I
well,
right?
And what's about the, no? What's the other one? There's another one where somebody's paying some percentage. There's two of them. Oh,
it was AMD and NVIDIA.
No, what's the one a couple weeks ago? The one about the U.S. Steel.
They're paying. U.S. Steel also paying a piece to the government?
They're paying a piece to Trump. Isn't he like they're not paying, but he's got the vote, and what do they get to do stuff? It's not the government. He's got it.
Okay, I might have missed that. But one way or the other, yeah,
if anything regarding them moving or anything other than else, now they didn't say anything about money. I'm not saying there isn't anything there, but that decision is his, not the president's.
No, listen, I hear you. I hear you. I have to go back and revisit that because I didn't. Maybe I might have missed that or I wasn't paying attention. But one way or the other, yesterday's move between NVIDIA and AMD I thought was very interesting considering they opened up the market again to China for those H20 chips and the M1 380 chips from AMD, I guess.
And then he said they were. Then he said they were crap.
Well, China said they were crap, and isn't it interesting that China said that, you know, they've got these remote location tracking capabilities? And I'm laughing. I'm going, really? China is the one now complaining about tracking capabilities? That's all they do is track. They track everybody, everywhere you go. So I thought it was comical that they came out and said that, you know, these NVIDIA chips have these tracking capabilities as well as, you know, kind of a backdoor remote access capability, which NVIDIA completely denied. Whether it's true or not, part of me says it's absolutely true. The other part of me says, well, you know, don't be so negative. But one way or the other, I thought it was interesting that he formulated the deal and then said, but the U.S. government wants 15% of the sales. Well, certainly it's kind of like a tax, right? It's a tax or a tariff, whatever, on NVIDIA and AMD for being able to do business with China. Do I think that's good or bad? I don't know. I'm mixed on that question. I love the fact that, you know, the U.S. government's going to get more money.
Okay, to define U.S. government, where do you think that check's going?
Well, which was my next point. I don't know where it's really going. Where should it be going? Should be going to cut the deficit. It should be going to pay our bills. It should be going to, you know, balance our books. Is it going to go there? I don't know. You kind of assume that's where it's supposed to go.
Well, it's like a 15% sales tax. Why don't you think the price, it won't raise the price?
Well, okay, so that's the other argument. Does NVIDIA have the capability to do that without raising the price? Look, right now they're getting zero, right? Because they're not selling chips to China. So now they're getting 85% of the chips to China. So is that going to cause them to raise the price, or is that going to just cause them to eat it? My guess is it's going to cause them to eat it.
How is now this is just definition. Maybe we have to get one of our attorney buddies, but you might know the answer.
Yeah.
The Constitution, which we don't pay any attention to anymore. That part I get. It's a rag document someplace in the archives. Specifically prohibits export tariffs. Tell me this isn't an export tariff.
It prohibits export tariffs. Well, that's interesting how you're defining it, right? Are they export tariffs? Are they sales?
What's the difference?
I suppose it's sales to a foreign country, which you have to assume is an export.
Right.
Well, then how does he get away with it if that's the case?
He gets away with everything. Who's going to stop him? All the people around his side, if the guy went out tomorrow and they got naked in the street, that would be fine with them, because the Democrats would be worse.
Yeah, okay, but there should be. Then I guess what we should start to see, we should start to see plenty of lawsuits, right? Saying you can't do this, it's against the Constitution, you can't do it. So let's see what happens.
In World War II, Kenny, as you know, and you probably are appalled by the fact that they put all those Japanese citizens in internment camps, right? Somebody sued. It worked its way through the courts. By the time the Supreme Court said you can't do that, the war was like 6 months from being over, and they just kept everybody near to the end, and then they said, okay, you can leave. There was never the idea that there's any, that we actually have a three-group system here. The Supreme Court has no ability to enforce anything. People that are enforced are the people he's ruled against. What's the point? Do you think that if they came up and said this is wrong, this is really an export tariff, they're going to say they're going to change anything? They're not going to stop. They've decided that they can just blow through this whole thing. Once in a while, you know, they'll get some sort of they actually pay attention to the courts. I'm not saying they don't ever, but on a big thing like this, who's going to make this definition? Clarence Thomas? Now give me a break. I mean, it's an export tariff. I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're right. I didn't realize that was in the Constitution, that you can't have export tariffs. But then you'd have to then isn't everything essentially an export tariff? Everything that we sell to these foreign countries and they pay a tax on, isn't that then? No, can't you then you say that's an export tariff?
Well, this is something different. I don't think they don't pay anything to the federal government.
They're paying income tax to the federal government. But in this case, what you're saying is that they're paying.
It's a good question. What if you and I make a widget in Illinois or in Florida? And we sell it to Germany. I don't think Germany pays a sales tax on that, do they? Or do they? If they did, they're paying it to Illinois, not the federal government.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting, because in this case, what you're saying is NVIDIA and AMD are selling this one product to China, and they're making money on it, but then NVIDIA and AMD are giving 15% of that revenue, or the profits, I guess, to the U.S. government.
We're probably too political here, but there was a guy on from Trump's gang, I'll use that term. I don't know which one it was, Kenny, because I was in the car listening to it. It might have been Face the Nation, or the other one. And the lady was asking him about whatever the tariff thing. And she said something about, well, you know, this is supposed to be Congress's deal, and they get this temporary, you know, ability to, in emergency situations. And the guy flat out, like if he was from, you know, I don't know what country you even want to say, he flat out said, it says an emergency situation. Anything the president decides an emergency is an emergency.
Yeah.
And I think you and I might go, I don't know about that necessarily. Like in this thing with Washington, the people, all the troops, he defined it as an emergency. What's the emergency?
Well, let me ask you a question. The emergency is apparently, and I'm not in Washington, I don't know, but if you talk to people from Washington, you see what's going on there, it suddenly has become very dangerous in the nation's capital. Don't you consider that an emergency?
Well, at what level? Which you decide to have federal troops, which aren't supposed to operate here, like in Rome, right? As soon as Caesar came across the Rubicon, it became a dictatorship, right?
Yes, but I don't view it that
way. Well,
yes,
but I'm saying, we have, I mean, I live in Chicago, Kenny. I drive in the morning before anybody else is up. I can tell you the issues that both parties have been not dealing with for 40 years have come home. The drug traffic. The drug traffic.
Yeah.
It's not all from Mexico. You think no white people here are making money off the drug?
No, 100%. But what I'm saying is, so okay, what do you do? Well, Chicago obviously cannot handle the problem. Am I right?
What do you mean by handle?
Well, you just said it. I mean, you drive in, you look around. There's drug trafficking going all over the place. There's murders left and right in Chicago, right? As there are in other big cities, they can't seem to stem that flow, right? They can't seem to stop those actions.
But
at what point do you say we need help?
There's been 40, 50 years of manufacturing leaving, jobs leaving.
Yep.
God knows what. Nobody's dealt with, left or right.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, now, by the way, but you could look at it and say, it's better than it was last year. It's not good. I mean, Washington's talking about their crime rates down. It's lowest it's been in 10 years.
The point is,
I'm agreeing with you. Know I am. I'm just trying to joust things up here. Is it appropriate for the president to go sit in a city council meeting in Washington and say it's getting better, but not getting better fast enough?
No, it's probably not appropriate.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the communication between somebody and somebody. What are you guys doing? What do you need help on? What can we do? If you put more people on the street, can the FBI help out with some of the forensic stuff so maybe those guys can get back on it? There's solutions here that you and I would move toward
versus going in there and taking over is what you're saying.
Because
what he did was go in and take over.
To say that there's always this thing about I'm in charge. I does there need to be help here in Chicago? God, yes. I mean, there's no forensic stuff. The FBI is good at that. Maybe they could take over part of that. Maybe there's all kinds of federal stuff here. Maybe there's training all the people that are retiring here at age 50 or 55, which, you know, I don't mind if you retire, but you're not getting a paycheck till you're 65. I'm sorry. In my world. Okay, maybe we have the FBI have classes for those people retiring, say, you 15 guys are now going to be forensic people for the next 10 years, and we're going to teach you how to do it. Or, by the way, the online crime. Chicago police are not capable of dealing with that now, but they could be with some training. There's ways you and I would assess this problem.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I'm just curious, though. I mean, clearly part of what he does is because it's him coming to the rescue. It's him showing, look, I'm not just going to sit back and do nothing. I'm taking a stand, right? Because to your point, for 15 or 18 or two decades or three decades, whatever it is, both sides have created this situation, like you said, in Chicago, that now is out of control. So it's been out of control for
20 years.
Yeah, okay, so you could come to the table and start to say, how can we help you? Or you can come to the table and say, you guys clearly can't do it, so I need to take over.
Well,
right?
Remember, you might be a tad young. Remember the Kerner Report?
The which one?
The Kerner Report back in the Johnson days. A governor, former governor turned judge, was considered, you know, such a high-end guy. They commissioned him to write a report on what's going on in the cities. This all started happening in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King, all that stuff. And he wrote this report talking about the governmental policies were going to lead to a permanent subclass if they don't do something about it.
Yep.
And it ended up, it was so unpopular that they came after the guy. And he ended up going to jail for when he was in governor, something about racetrack stocks, which he vehemently denied. They convicted a sitting judge, I think, because of the report. And guess what? It's played out word for word. It wasn't like these guys didn't have an idea what they were doing.
I hear you.
Scooping people up, putting them in projects, no jobs, education going downhill. I mean, okay. How do you write that ship? You know, and Trump warns the homeless. I saw that headline. I almost wanted to vomit. Kenny, if you came here, I would want to take you on the tour where we get shot. You look at the homeless. You look at the amount of drugs. Last night I stopped to get ice because we had people coming in the morning. I've been there at 5 in the morning, and there's a young black guy in there. He's digging out a change out of his pocket for a vape. That guy has no more ability to go to work tomorrow than I do being a jockey. Now, he's not useless. I mean, if you helped him out, got him off the drugs, did something. I mean, he has to do it himself, right? But you have to have some sort of a capability. The man is, I'm not going to call him a kid, he wasn't. But he looked like somebody who had been on something really strong, or he looked like he was 30 years older than he is.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's 3 months, maybe more, of solid care before he's capable of working 20 hours a week, much less 40.
Yeah,
the homeless situation now is so much different than the homeless situation 40 years ago when I was on the floor, where they were guys from Vietnam that, you know, didn't get their way back in and just were messed up from Agent Orange. These are all young people that are drugged at a max. They look like they're 60 and they're 30.
It looks like that in New York as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is not get those people to work crap. Why aren't they working 20 hours a week? I mean, I've never seen it this bad. This is a massive solution from both sides of the aisle, not pointing fingers at people.
Yeah, no, I would agree it is. But I also have to tell you, I do think that part of the problem that exacerbated this was also monetary policy over the last 15 years. The fact that they kept rates so low and everything
without
exploded in real estate, I absolutely contributed to where we are today, 100%.
You know, you and Hal are turning into mini Friedmanites, by the way. Which isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
He hates it when I say that because he keeps saying, I'm from Austria. I said, what's the difference? Money's the same in Austria as it is here.
No, I'm not from Austria. There's a school of economic thought called the Austrians.
Ah.
And they're kind of a libertarian, non-mathematical group of economists who prominent scholars were born in Austria.
Ah.
But then came to the United States, during the interwar, during the Nazi occupation of Austria and Germany. They feared for their life because some of them were Jewish. So they came to the United States, and because there are so many of them from Austria, they call it the Austrian school. So it's not, I'm not from Austria.
Well, you know, you two guys, I'll tell you what, we spent 2 days in Vienna when we were doing this lecture tour, Dr. J and I. I'll tell you what, the three of us landed our old butts over there, we would have the best time. They got great bars. They're right, these things, there's something called a Harun. You ever hear of that, Kenny? You're a world traveler.
No.
It's
no.
Across, you know, like in, what was the movie?
Sounds like a pastry.
No, remember the movie, like the Sounds of Music? Where they were, yeah. Well, there's actually,
yeah.
If you go like around the edge of Vienna, and I'm not, you know, big on geography, and all the vineyards and stuff are on one side of the street because it's all mountains. Well, you go right. On the other side of the street, you go over the mountains, you end up in like Germany. There's nothing there. It's nothing but mountains, like hitting the Rockies. The other side of the street, all these vineyards have, they're like a big restaurant and place where you can go and drink wine. Massive buffets of great chow, more wine than you can shake a stick at, and the scenery, let's just say the scenery is out of this world, both of the mountains and of the other people wandering around, if you catch my drift. And the bar, I thought the place was incredible. We could have a good time there, I guarantee you.
How did the dollar do there? How much did a $20 bill buy in terms of wine?
Well, this was like new wine, and I don't know how many I don't know how many pitchers we had other than way too many, and I think it was like $5.
New wine, isn't new wine considered like soda pop to people who drink wine?
Yeah, and it was all kinds of fruit in there. So the next, what's the worst thing that can happen to you when you're drinking and don't want to drink too much? Is you're out there with a group. They all leave, and another group comes in wanting to meet you. So you're stuck with group two, right? The next morning.
It sounds like the time I went to Auburn to watch the Washington State-Auburn football game, and all the fans from Auburn were so nice, they bought me drinks, and I couldn't function the next day.
Well, Dr. J, Dr. J and I, Kenny, you can imagine this. We're walking to the lecture, right? And
yeah.
I go, Zan, how bad are you? He goes, I'm pretty bad. He goes, but I'll make you a deal. I'll do the first hour if you do the next two. And I said, I go, done. It went in the court. And then we're in the boardroom of Credit Anstalt. You guys, there's a button where your foot, if you want to, like during the board meeting, if you want to call for the butler, all you do is hit the button. It's unbelievable. So then the place is hotter than the hinges of hell, right? So I go, I got to open one of these windows because I'm dying. And the people in there, they were worse than us. I mean, it was just like, it was a rough night. I open up this huge window, and across the street is this lady sunbathing, and they don't do bathing suits over there, right?
Right.
So right. We had to adjourn the meeting.
It could be a bad thing, though.
Well, we had to adjourn the meeting so we could check.
You definitely want me wearing a bathing suit.
So John goes, I think we should have a quick break and grab some water and maybe look out the window. can you imagine that? So everybody kind of grabs their water, kind of sneaks by the window. This is in the boardroom of this bank. Kenny was so funny. You would have loved it. So finally, after about 2 hours, this is what I was kind of talking about earlier. It's an interesting story about how they traded over there. After about 2 or 3 hours, I'm doing for all this theoretical stuff, and I'm doing dividend plays, and John's doing God knows what else. So finally, the guy goes, look, everybody's here all pretty hungover. Why don't we do this? Why don't we stop the bullshit you guys are talking about and look at our positions? They're way too big for us. Get a load of this, Kenny. You'd make markets like 10 up on the options. And I'm looking at these guys' positions, and all of a sudden they got like 3,000 options. And I go, how'd you get that? You're 10 up. And the guy goes, if somebody calls you from one of the banks, like I was talking earlier, and needs you to take the position, or one of the firms, one of the customers, we'll take the position. I said, well, in other words, you cross it without being even on the floor. You don't even, you know, you don't.
Right.
I goes, yeah, we don't even report it. Wait a minute. So you got essentially an over-the-counter market working within the guise of an exchange. Well, yeah, I guess you could put it that way. So can you imagine that? If you're making, well, maybe, who knows what, but if you're making a market in the IBM pit and somebody calls up and says, hey, how about doing this 1,000 lot for me? And you don't even tell the rest of the people in the crowd you're doing it. So we ended up working on these guys' positions for the next 2 hours, and they were happy as clams, and we went out to lunch and started drinking again. But, I mean, it was a whole different world, Kenny. Everybody was an employee.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Can you imagine trading options on a stock that is owned 85% by one bank?
No, I cannot.
I said, what are you going to do if the bank decides they want to buy more or less? Well, that's a chance you got to take. Anyway, okay.
I gotta jump.
I'm sorry to bore you with all that stuff, but it was kind of fun. The bottom line is we'd have a good time in Vienna.
All right, great. Well, listen, let's book it. I'd be happy to go.
Yeah, the stock exchange. Well, next time I'll tell you about the stock exchange. But anyway, thank
all
you,
right,
Kenny.
See
ya. S&P down 2, NASDAQ futures up 4. What do you make of what's going on? Are we turning into the governments have a piece of every country of every company or what?
Well, to me, it just seems like observing what's going on over the last 20, 30 years, it just seems like each president does usurps more and more power than the previous administration.
Well,
using
Biden didn't because he was half asleep. But.
Well, yeah, but he still tried to use the COVID national emergency to force everybody to take a vaccine that he and Kamala said was Trump's vaccine, and they would never take it when they were running for office. So, I mean, the governors of these states and the previous administration used national power to keep us locked down, force us to have a medication that we may or may not want. So, I mean, this is...
You know, all that started under Trump.
Well, I know, yeah, but it doesn't start with Trump. It starts with each previous administration. It's the problem.
I'm saying that the vaccine stuff, he gave millions of dollars.
But what I'm saying is it starts with the first regulation that government ever issues.
I'm with you, yeah.
And when government issues its first regulation, let's just say that there's two consequences. And this could be a regulation that comes from, it could be a law or a regulation that comes from either the president or the Congress. So you have this first intervention. And we know that these government interventions have consequences. So when you look at the first intervention, it has, say, two consequences. Now you need government policy, unless you scale back that intervention, you need a government policy, two of them, to address the two negative consequences. Now you got four consequences coming out of those two. And then now you need four laws or regulations to paper over what you just did, the consequences that you created. So you can see that this grows geometrically. And it's far from a free market. It's highly regulated. And it seems like every administration, the president of the United States gets more and more power. And Congress gives up that power. You know, they're talking. I mean, now we're speaking about eliminating filibusters. We've already eroded the state check on the federal government by turning Senate elections into Democratic elections. The Senate elections, the senators used to be representatives of the state. So we've already eroded a lot of the institutions that prevented us from becoming a democracy.
How far are we away from?
We were a republic, and we're becoming more of a democracy.
How far away from we are from the Enabling Act?
The Enabling Act.
Enabling Act.
Oh, we're enabling it, of course. Because
I'm talking about there was an act in Germany where the Congress disbanded, gave all the power to Hitler. We're there.
Same thing happened to Rome. I've been saying this for a long time, that our constitutional republic is really an illusion, and the freedoms that we think we have are really an illusion. They can be taken away on a whim. We saw that during COVID.
As a quick review, you know the history of the vaccines during the COVID stuff, what they did? When I say they, it was the Trump administration, and I'm not so
sure. I know,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure it wasn't a pretty good idea. What they did was they identified seven companies, you know, Merck, Pfizer, you name it. There were seven companies, there were a few overseas, and they put together a plan where they essentially guaranteed to buy a whole bunch of whatever shots if they were as soon as they got approved by the FDA. And the deal was if you had the money to do all the research yourself, then they were going to pay you something like $20 a shot for like a million shots or something. I have it buried somewhere here. And the companies that had enough money, they were going to get $20 a shot. The companies that didn't have enough money, where the government had to give them money for the research, they were going to get $10 a shot. So if you wanted upfront money, you had to sell the eventual vaccine for less dough.
But, you know, the funny thing is they were experimenting on these viruses.
I'm just trying to say,
vaccine, so a lot of the work was already done. And then on top of that, they give these companies legal immunity against the damages they might...
Correct.
Their product might inflict.
But I'm saying that the deal was to get these things out there as fast as possible because they thought a vaccine was the way to go. Now, if you listen to Carl,
let's not call it a vaccine. A vaccine stops the spread.
Essentially, a flu shot is what they're trying to do.
And it stops the spread. These shots don't do that.
By the way, you realize now if you went online, that's why, you know what somebody, one of my listeners advised me to do, Carl and actually did, is go buy like a 30-year-old Webster's dictionary.
Yeah.
Just so you know what this stuff. If you look at a vaccine now, people define the COVID thing as a vaccine. It's not a vaccine. It's like a flu shot.
It's not. No, it's not.
And but anyway,
it's an experimental treatment that I agreed with. I agreed with Biden and Kamala Harris during the election of 2020. They didn't want to take a rushed out vaccine by Trump. They didn't want to take it. But as soon as, this is the funny thing is, as soon as the election's over, they own that vaccine. My mother-in-law to this day thinks that it was Joe Biden that pushed the vaccine out. And if it wasn't for Joe Biden, that vaccine wouldn't have been.
It came down to people in nursing homes. It helped them a lot. Okay.
Yeah.
But it ended up being in what did the guy William Kennedy in his book regarding why did the U.S. have to use the atomic bomb? And his comment was, events were in the saddle and they drove the men hard. These things created such a momentum. At first, if you told people they worked, then the momentum was, well, everybody around me better have one because I don't want to get this.
Government says you have to take it.
Yeah, but a lot of
people are going,
a lot of the
moment, well, work, a lot why of are you forcing me to take it?
You didn't need government to fight this battle.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, once Merck or whoever the hell came out and said, this thing works, and look how dangerous COVID is, Joe Biden, Trump, they could have kept their mouth shut and not said a word. Because you had fights in the bar, you know, where guys would be saying, well, if you don't take it, I don't think you should be outside of your house. Wait a minute, the thing doesn't even work. By the way, I already had it. I mean, I had it earlier. I didn't need a vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, so the fights were in the population. Family members still don't talk because one took the thing and one didn't.
Well, this is my point of the whole thing. If the government is right and you believe the government and the vaccine is a vaccine, it stops the spread and stops the disease. If you got the vaccine, you're good. You don't have to tell anybody else to take it.
Well, but that's not the way people are.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
because government. What does government do? What does the media and the government do? They stir up all kinds of divisions, because they got a power. They got to divide us to conquer us. That's what's been going on
Forget the vaccines. What about the masks?
Yeah.
One of my buddies, show listener, is out walking his dog at 5 a.m. and all of a sudden his door opens. This old crotchety guy gets out and says, "Where the hell is your mask?" He goes, "What do you mean my mask? I'm the only guy out here."
Yeah,
he said something like "shut the bleep up and get back in your house" or something.
You know, there are some people that still believe that the mask was intended to stop virus spread. It did not do that
because an
N95 mask, we couldn't wear them when people were removing asbestos in the Navy. And the reason why is because the pores on the N95 are bigger than the asbestos particles,
yeah.
And asbestos particles are bigger than the individual pieces of virus. So the only thing the CDC claimed, I actually read it, the only thing the CDC claimed about the mask, the N95 mask, is it stopped the spread of water droplets. Now, let me ask you a question. Yeah. If that water droplet is stopped by the mask, what happens to the water that's containing all those virons, the little virus?
Well, it evaporates.
Well, the water eventually evaporates, and now what do you got? You got a water bubble, a droplet, that was filled with maybe millions of little virus particles being breathed in and out of your mouth
without a doubt
that mask. And the only thing the mask does, the reason why doctors wear them is because they block bacteria. Bacteria are larger than the pores. So
I get it,
the
yeah.
mask is for the bacteria spread, not the pieces of virus.
In the local salon, not that I've ever, we have to get ready here for this number pretty soon, but the local salon, the guy, remember how people were wearing the handkerchiefs, like they're wrapping a stagecoach up over their nose?
Yeah.
And what do we know, the like the red or blue hankies? Like, basically like a Western movie, there's a guy in the bar, he's an attorney, he goes, how come you don't want to wear a mask? I said, well, first of all, I already had it. And I said, by the way, that thing you got over your face, which he kept bringing up to drink his beer, right? I said, by the way, even if the thing did work, which I don't think it does, how many times a day do you change? When's the last time you washed that thing? Guess what he tells me?
Yeah.
I never have.
Yeah.
I said, so you've been wearing it for a month and you never washed it?
Bacteria probably made him sick.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking a little bit earlier about the, I won't say natural, but it seems to me the general lag that I've seen for 45 years in the CPI data, that if the tariffs are going to have an effect, they're going to have some effect because people are paying it. When are we going to see the effect start pouring through these numbers? I'm saying just normally, not without any influence coming from the White House or anything, normally you wouldn't see all the effect, and I don't know why this is. I'm going to say you get to us a little bit this month. You're probably not going to see the full effect till maybe November. And I don't know why there's a six-month lag, but it seems like there is. What do you think about that? I mean, it seems like there is. I can't explain why, but there always has been.
Well, to me, a tariff is a tax. And as I mentioned before, when you tax something, it doesn't matter who you tax. You can tax the firm or you can tax the consumer. Utah, because they have this culture, the religious culture, the state was founded by Mormons. They probably, and I'm just guessing, they don't want people to smoke, so they probably tax consumers. New York, because the company that makes cigarettes is big, bad, and evil, they tax the firms. It doesn't matter who you tax because of a thing called tax incidents. When you tax somebody, the burden is shared. If you tax the firm raises its price, but reduces its output.
Okay, but in terms of the CPI, there's a
I'm getting to that.
There's a massive difference.
If you're talking about products, if you're putting a tax on a foreign firm, because that foreign firm wants to export to the United States, then what's going to happen is that tariff is going to be shared. That tax is going to be shared between the importer in the United States, who happens to be in the United States, and the exporter, who happens to be...
It depends. You know that. It depends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depends on the
product. So it's going to be shared.
Might not. It might not. Yeah. It might not be shared at all. Depends on the product.
But it's shared because demand is downward sloping and supply is generally upward sloping. Austrian economists, not people from Austria, but Austrian economists believe that supply curves should be vertical lines. And the reason why I say that is because when you assume an upward sloping line, you're kind of ignoring this time component and the entrepreneurial activity that went behind the decision to supply X number of units a month ago, right? A month ago, you roll the dice and you say, I think I can sell X units next month.
That's why your buddy Milton Friedman would have about 40 different supply curves on a chart trying to figure them out.
So really, it depends on just the demand curve. If you think the Austrians are right, the sharing of the tax burden is a result of demand sloping downward.
Well, they're not going to share the tax. But grade me here, Professor. If there's 45 automotive manufacturers in the U.S. and one coming from overseas, it's very competitive, and you throw a tariff, you charge that car when it comes here, paid for on this end, you can pretty much guarantee that in order to stay, quote, competitive, the foreign car manufacturer is going to have to drop his price.
Exactly,
correct?
Yeah.
Okay, but now if it's cola nuts, and there's only one place in the world that have cola nuts, there's absolutely no competition anywhere, I'm going to say Coca-Cola is going to pay 99% of that tariff. Because there is no, why should they? That's your problem.
Yeah.
You want
it's a very nuanced thing, and virtually
every of the millions of products are somewhere between those two, where there's going to be a little bit of an absorption. And we also forget the part that the people here, if say it's 50-50, 50 overseas, 50 here, I'm going to say the people here are going to raise their prices because now they can't.
But, Tom, going back to the cola nuts thing, this kind of this has already happened. This happened with China. The British government was trying to get goods into China. China had a kind of like a pro, at the time, China had this pro-Trump like view. China wanted to make, it wanted to be self-sufficient. This is like hundreds of years ago. It wanted to be self-sufficient, and it didn't mind exporting tea. The British wanted to export the China tea, but they were losing silver to China because there was nothing that the UK had that China wanted to import. So eventually, tea was grown in India.
Well, they could have used like sewing machines and stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff they could have imported.
Well, this predates all industrial. We're talking, you know, 100, 200 years ago. We're talking like 1700s. China was closed, but it did sell tea to the world. And the British loved the Chinese tea. But they couldn't pay with wool because the Chinese had silk. They had to pay in silver. And the UK was bleeding silver. All their silver was going to China. So what is the UK to do? Well, the UK probably tried to start growing tea in a place like India. But it also led to a war. It led to a war between China and the UK, which resulted in the UK winning and gaining control of Hong Kong. All the trade then went through a city in China called Canton. And the Chinese were adamant about being self-sufficient. So going back to the cola thing, if there's only one country where the cola bean is grown, in the short run, yeah, the tax is going to be borne by Americans, the tariff. But because that price is a lot higher than it used to be, what it does do, and this is what everybody ignores, it ignores what is going to happen. What's going to happen is some cola beans in some country is going to find another location in the world to grow those cola beans in a similar climate, that in a country that's not being hit by the tariffs. So those kinds of things happen over the long run. And this is why the CBO is wrong, because ceteris paribus isn't accurate, isn't it a good assumption in the short run? But man, these models that they use, the models that a lot of these talking heads on the news programs use, they assume ceteris is paribus for like years. That's not the case. The tariff will probably, in my opinion, eaten by a lot of the foreign firms.
I'm going to say,
but here's the but. What it does do is it could, at the margin, the firms that are exporting, whose margins are a lot thinner than the bigger, more established firms, it causes those exporters, those smaller firms with tight margins, it may cause them to eventually leave the market. If they can't find cost savings, they're going to leave the market. So the policy ends up monopolizing an industry. So in the long run, you're going to see probably much higher prices coming into the United States, which is going to eventually affect the United States, because at the margin, eventually either those marginal firms, the ones with the tight margins, either they find cost savings or they leave that particular market and do something else. And so you have a fewer firms supplying the export markets to the United States. And that's when it will really kick in, if these things persist. So there's this long run effect, right? Where these marginal firms right now are eating it, but they're not going to continue to eat the tariff. They're going to do what? They're going to either find some cost savings to widen their profit margins, and if they can't do that, then they're going to exit the market altogether, and you're going to end up with fewer firms and higher prices, because that's what government regulations do. In the United States, government regulations rules do what? It drives out the marginal suppliers, and all you're left with is one or two very large. And maybe that's the intended goal. It was the intended goal of the Nazi government. The Nazi government wanted eight large firms, a small number of very large firms, because those firms are easy to control. When you have a bunch of small firms in a dynamic free economy, managing the economy is like herding chickens. And we know from Rocky II, it's really difficult to herd chickens.
Well, I think you end up with the way that's being calculated. If you put a sales tax, this is the way the CPI is picked up. Yeah. If you put a sales tax on, first of all, even Trump wouldn't be able to get a 10% sales tax through the anywhere. People would say no friggin' way. Now the problem is, because then the taxes are not in your CPI. But now these are, because they come before. So he's going to have a problem with the CPI. Am I right?
I don't expect any massive jumps in CPI until those marginal firms who are trying to eat it, who are either breaking even or now making losses trying to export to the United States, if they can't find enhancements to technology or production methods, and they can't reduce their cost at the margin, what will happen is they'll leave this market.
But you're not going to leave. Nobody's going to get 25% more productive in 4 months.
Yeah. So what's going to happen is those firms, those marginal firms, will just say, look, I can't make any money selling to the United States, so I'm not going to.
Well,
so now you got one or two firms selling monopoly prices to the United States, and that's when it's kicking.
But you know, as the economist that you are, by the way, you should be looking at this number. Where are we here? Month over month is 0.3. I'm getting a. Let me refresh this so I can get the month.
0.2. And.
Oh, it is 0.2. Yeah.
And it's I've got the table up. There's to say that it's that maybe we ought to fire the CPI people would be an understatement.
They're afraid.
Well, there's clear crap in here, and of course the market's loving it. The SPOOs are up.
SPOOs are up 27. NASDAQ's up 110.
Well, energy is down 1.6%. So that's
well, energy. Yeah, I need to look at that though, because energy. So gasoline supposedly is down 2.2, but that, I'll tell you what, I'm certainly not seeing that, and. I don't know. I mean, if you look at our Bob ain't telling us that kind of story. Is it down a little? Yeah, but there was a huge spike in our Bob right at the end of last month, which didn't get picked up because it was past the survey date. Yeah. Okay, and well, guess what? Now you've got is it down a tiny little bit? Between then and now, yeah, but I've seen zero in terms of actual, it's an unch at the gas station. Yeah. Is it in the futures? No, not at that level, not at enough to make it that anyway.
Look at what, and maybe one of you guys can explain to me.
Well, the energy component of the CPI down as much as it is, that could actually be a sign,
Carl,
that.
What are you looking at?
Yeah, that's demand destruction, Hal.
Okay, but
that's what I'm saying.
All right, what are you guys looking at? The actual gasoline is minus 0.5%. The adjusted is minus 2.2%, so I don't get fired by the president.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the other thing, too, is that electricity is up substantially, and yes, it really is, okay, especially over the last 12. So, I mean, by the way, all these data centers, if you've ever actually paid a commercial power bill, you know that if you're a large enough user, you get a kilowatt hour rate that's much lower than what the schlub in the house gets.
Yeah. Okay? Oh, yeah. It's like water rights out of California.
Yeah, but the problem with this is when everybody has to, when it's the middle of July, and the air conditioners are blasting, that power company has to go out and buy that power from somewhere. And of course, that you know, at the wholesale level, that is a supply and demand market.
Well, let's
and the amount of power that the amount of electricity goes into powering these AI models is immense.
All right,
so,
guys, let's do something for the regular schlump on the show, like me.
Yeah.
Let's take electricity. All right, I've got it 5.5% year over year.
That's the claim. Yeah.
That's the claim. Okay, now when I get my electric bill, and I assume it's the same for you guys in the places you have fled to, other than the city. Now I'm going to have 15 items on there. So if they come in with a peak demand thing that says, okay, if you run your air conditioner from 11 to 3, it's more. Or if they say for the privilege of getting electricity from Commonwealth Edison from the street, your customer charge is going to go from 20 to 40 or 30. Right. Now, is that part of electricity? I'm going to say no.
No, so it isn't. And interestingly enough, now when I lived in Florida, we got a quite detailed bill. Okay, so we had to cut, you know, everywhere there's a customer charge because it's basically the meter charge. Right? You have the meter in the box, right?
We've got four of them in our building, so our customer charge is like $160 a month starting out.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got the customer charge. But now, when I was in Florida, we had a quite detailed breakdown of fuel cost recovery, the actual generation. Now, I was on a co-op system there. All right, so it was not wasn't a commercial thing. It was a co-op, and they laid it all out, and a lot of that, fluctuated on a somewhat regular basis. Here in Tennessee, it's 12 cents a kilowatt hour, and there's no breakout. Now that
there's no charge for having service.
Oh no, there is. You still have the meter charge, okay. But the power charge for a residential customer is not broken out at all here. So you use 1,500 kilowatt hours at 12 cents, multiply, add the customer charge, which is basically, you know, the meter box, and there you are. The problem that you have with these data centers is that the transmission costs in order to get the power into the area are capital expenditures. So when I put one of these large data centers up, I am forcing the utility to eat capital expenditures that this goes back to what I used to tell the county commission. I said, you guys, you know, somebody wants to put up this 40-story condo building, all right? The water main service and sewer line service is insufficient to support the additional demand from that thing. The correct thing to do, and by the way, the road needs to be widened too. The correct thing to do is to nail that guy with an impact fee up front that he has to pay before he can have his permit. To get the permit, he has to pay the impact fee. The impact fee pays for the capital expenditure. The property taxes down the road pay for the maintenance and the continuing operation of that infrastructure. However, the capital expense has to come from somewhere. When these data centers go in, they need to start doing the same thing to these guys. You want to...
Yeah, but that's not going to happen because the data center will just locate to a place where they won't have to worry about that.
Well, guess what? This is what they always said at the county commission is, well, you know, but then the guy's going to build it the next county over where we, you know, where they don't do this to him. And I said, yeah, and guess what? Then that guy that builds the condo is going to screw the next county's quality of life instead of ours.
Yeah.
Okay, and so my argument was always that's the correct answer. And by the way, if these people get their quality of life screwed enough times, they'll start demanding the same thing, and this problem will get corrected.
Well, there's a negotiation there that.
Yeah, and guess what? You don't have a seat at that table, Chief.
Well, I'm saying,
but these guys are shopping for the region or the area that's going to give them
looking for actual kickbacks.
They're not going to pay those fees.
The deal they gave either was John Deere or some of the bigger places here they allegedly kept in Illinois. Some of the sales tax that the people are supposed to be paying the state go to the company.
I know. This stuff is just it's bonkers. Yeah, I'm looking at this. By the way, motor fuel they claim motor fuel down 0.4 on the month, fuel oil up 3.7. Now that's diesel. Okay, fuel oil is diesel.
Diesel has, actually has shot up for some reason.
Well, it has. But I mean, that's, by the way, that isn't everything you buy, because guess what? Every truck and train, what do you think it runs on?
You know, that right there, that's interesting, because that one's going up. It could be an indication that, you know, there's a lot more commerce going on within the United States. Maybe the tariffs are encouraging people to make it home.
Actually, Hal, the biggest problem with fuel oil isn't that. It's that all this crap with Russia and Europe, and the threat of derivative sanctions. What's happening is that we are now by executive fiat, and not just by ours, by the European Union as well, which is laying these things also.
Yeah.
Are essentially exporting huge amounts of fuel oil. And we will be doing the same thing with LNG. We just don't have the capacity. We'd be doing it with LNG tankers right now.
Yeah, that's what we had Greg on last Monday talking about. Yeah. That's what he does. He does the...
So there's a big component of that
crack
diesel
spread. He does the crack spread.
Diesel's
and he says
being exported.
You look at the oil, the crude oil number, you think the market over there has been quiet. It's not. He said the heating oil is all over the block.
Right. And the problem with that is of course... You know, there's only so many barrels of oil. There's only so many refineries. If you start sending all this stuff over into Europe and other nations, as you know, so that they don't get hit with these derivative tariffs for buying Russian oil. guess what's going to happen to your price over here in the United States?
I've got this owner's equivalent rent. I was going to ask you guys. We talk about these numbers, and
that's for the CPI.
That's garbage.
And the housing component. The housing component and the healthcare component.
Yeah, it's those garbage.
Okay, but I sent that thing out to you dudes. I forget the name of it because I can't. I had to switch browsers and I can't. It seemed like all my favorites got lost here. But anyway, I sent you guys out. It's 2013 something something. These guys have a site. Somebody has a site that essentially, if you query in there, it'll go back however many years you want of that line of the CPI.
Yeah.
So the if I could find my favorites, the from 2000 to 2025, from then to now, they have owner's equivalent rent going from 100 to 213, which is essentially 110% or something in 25 years. Which
a little more than a double. Yeah.
And I'm saying that.
Yeah.
You look at the housing prices are probably a triple.
Right.
I was looking at the taxes in Illinois easily have to be a triple, maybe more.
Well, the housing prices have doubled. Median housing prices have doubled, 10 years?
That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying that I'm trying to...
10 years, not over a 20-year period, but over just a 10-year period.
What I was trying to do is you guys are saying that line is bull bleep, basically, and I'm trying to explain to you. I actually went back and proved you guys are right. You realize how hard it is to agree with people on the show? And I actually went back. I can only go back to 2007. Now, Nancy thinks I'm too high on this.
Well, maybe if we were in studio with you, Tom, we'd be able to read your facial expressions better.
Could be. Well, according to this thing I looked at, again, it's another one, homeowner's insurance on essentially a typical house is now $2,743. Would you guys agree with that? Does that seem like the number? Yearly,
that's a extremely variable thing.
I'm assuming they're apples to apples, but I don't know. This is just a site. They only went back to 2007, and they had 700 hours in 2007. So let's be nice and say 500 in 2000. Well, that's a quintuple. That's not a double.
Yeah,
I mean
right.
And I'm thinking property taxes, at least here in Illinois, they've been up 40% in the last 10 years, or the last 5 years. So I have to believe they're at least a triple since 2000.
You know, it depends on where that is, too, because around here, you know, one of the things about the realty sites is that a lot of them have the tax history as well as the price history of, you know, both sales and attempted sales, you know, listed, even if they don't sell. The listing entry is there, right? And in some areas, you're absolutely right. I mean, where I, you know, where I used to live in Chicago, my God. And then even worse, in the area where my mother used to live, you know, triples is probably understates it. On the other hand, around here, it hasn't been as crazy. So, I mean, a lot of it depends on what the what the state and local governments fund with the property taxes. You would think the logic would be the closer to the consumption of the tax revenue the assessment is, the more rational people tend to be. You'd be exactly backward on that, Chief.
Depends on the area.
No, I'm saying, you know, my experience, I'm just saying my experience, okay? Now, you know, when I lived in Illinois, when I lived in other parts of the Midwest, when I lived in Florida, your schools were funded by your property taxes on a broken out separate line item.
Yes.
All right? And so as a result, you could see, you know, the insanity that was going on in places like Chicago, where you got 30 kids in a building that should hold 400, and oh, by the way, guess what that ends up reflecting back into? Your property tax bill, because that's how they're paying for it.
Well, the suburbs, I mean,
But here's my point, right? Then I move here to Tennessee. Tennessee does not do that. The schools are funded out of the Tennessee State General Fund.
They're sort of, I won't say half and half, but there's something here. You get a little something out of both. Mostly it's local.
But most of it's local. Yeah. Now here, most of it's not. Okay, now there are some counties where there is some element of it, particularly in within the large incorporated city areas, but for the most part it isn't, and it's rather interesting to see the differential, because, you know, of course, at the end of the day, all the places do provide public school buildings, right? So and teachers and such, but yeah, I mean, on the tax side, yes. And I mean, where my mother used to live, my God, I mean, you know, when she...
Well, I did a study in 2020 for the show. It was 20 versus 2000.
Yeah.
And I went through the CPI numbers, and some of them were sloppy and some weren't.
Right.
The CPI, I think, from 2000, 2020, now, what am I thinking is they had it up 80%. So it was up, you know, for that 20 years, they were up 0.81%. 81% is the CPI.
Right.
And I went back and I looked at the, I actually found a site, and you guys are better at this. I can't find it anymore. Actually, I think it's a pay site now. But it's a site that has every college every college in the country. But it was like, there's a boatload of them. Going back all the way to 2000 or earlier, their tuition every year, room and board every year. Yeah. Out-of-state tuition, it's an incredible site. So basically the average there was from 2000 to 2025, 2020, not 25, everything was up 285%, not the 80, right?
Yeah.
And then I looked at, what the hell was the other one I looked at? Well, I dug into public education, and now this gets sloppy, because in Illinois, like roughly 50% of your tax bill goes for the schools.
Right.
So I went back in there, and it was 285%. Same number, which is scary. I'll tell you what's even scarier. I went back, and the health care we talk about all the time. It's like, well, how can I do this, keep it simple, stupid? I went back, and I picked a number that a firm, like PTI or like any place, how much we would pay per month for our employees for health care.
Yeah.
In 2000 through 2020. Now, I left out the part that people were paying more of their own stuff, the deductible might be. I just kept it simple, stupid. Guess what, guys? The same number, 285%. How can that be? And yet the CPI is 80.8.
Well, yeah. Because it's obviously intentional BS, okay? Yeah. I mean, and by the way, one of the reasons it's intentional BS is because the COLAs in Social Security in particular are calculated off the CPI.
Right.
And so, oh, by the way, if you're the guy that has to pay those COLAs, and the government is, do you want to tell the truth about inflation? Or do you wish to lie about inflation and pay less? So basically you strangle all the people that are supposed to get these adjustments.
Well, if you look at the tax code too, right?
Right.
Aren't the thresholds adjusted for CPI?
They are.
Well, the federal poverty level gets adjusted based on this table too.
You can't.
Thresholds are adjusted by CPI. They're not advancing.
Right.
You can't go down that road, or you're running the politics. I'll give you a flashback. When I first came out of school, I used to do. I wasn't that great at it, but those days it was pretty simple. Remember, you used to get the huge tax thing in the mail with all the tables and all the stuff. Everybody got their before there was a computer. Well, I helped people with their taxes, and I'm going to say, boy, oh boy, I think I actually had one of them. I had one online and I lost it. You go back and if you want to research, you can go back and find the 1977 tax return, and it's there in history. And they used to have probably maybe as many as 20 or 22 tax levels. And
if you made like
seven or eight now.
Yeah, but we got down to like a couple. Now we're going back up again. But
we're at seven or eight.
So now if you made like $16,500, in those days, you paid like $500 plus 10% of the amount to like 18. Then when you got to 18, you paid $650 plus 18% of the. It was crazy. So when you look at the years in there with the, even with your COLA adjustments, if you started out making $20,000 in 1971 when it all started, say, and by 1983 you're up to 40. You think you're even, but you're not. Even if say your COLA kept exactly even with the CPI number. So if you look at it and say, well, gee, this Hal guy, he was making 20, the prices have doubled, now he's making 40. What's the problem? Problem is, your taxes are now probably 25 instead of 12. Matter of fact, right now, if the big one, I think you're mentioning it, Hal, the big jump is between, it used to be between 40, over 40,000. Now I think it's like 42 or something, like you say, it's indexed with the CPI. Yeah. I think under 42, and correct me here, guys, I think you pay 12%. Over 42, you pay like 22. So if you've actually kept pace in the last 3 years with what we think the inflation really is, like 35%, if you were making 40 and now you're making 52, they're taking another 10% of the other 12.
Well, you're getting bent over the table. Yeah. And by the way, if you think that's bad with what's going to happen here at the end of the year, everybody, of course, is trying to, the Democrats are all trying to blame the Republicans for this, but the fact is that it was the Democrats that made this temporary in the first place, which is the getting rid of the subsidy cliff on Obamacare policies, which snaps back on as of January 1st, okay, this coming January 1st. Well, guess where you get the cliff point from? The cliff point comes from the federal poverty level, which is computed off the CPI tables.
Right.
So this inflation that has happened over the last 3-4 years, all right, and which is still continuing, of course, despite the fact that they're claiming it's not, is going to mean that where that subsidy cliff was, at 40,000, for example, I don't know precisely exactly where it was when it was killed by that bill on a temporary basis. But, 40,000, the real number is they're going to say, well, now it's 43, right? Because, that's what their calculation is. Oh, it's 7%, whatever. BS, okay, the real number would be like 55, all right, or 60. But are we going to have, is that number going to be at 55 or so? No, of course not. It's going to be at 42 or 43 or whatever it is.
Is the Obamacare... It used to be the cutoff is if you made over 50, you didn't get anything, right? Now, is it still 50?
It was 40. Well, originally it was 40, you didn't get anything.
Okay.
But then what the inflation, what Biden's IRA did on a temporary basis, and again, the reason that Congress does this all the time is because the CBO is required to calculate the impact on the deficit as if all things that have an expiration date will actually expire. Okay, regardless of whether or not history says no, they won't. The fact is that by law, they have to compute it that way. It's not a, it's not about an actuarial judgment. It's actually in the law. So they are. It is demanded by the Congress that they lie on purpose, and so that's the reason you have all this game playing that goes on with these temporary things that are done. But the problem here is that what the IRA did was said, I think the percentage is 7%. If your total amount of premiums was in excess of 7% of your AGI, it was capped there, regardless of your income. All right. So even though, so you know, if you're somebody that's older but not yet Medicare eligible, like me, for example, all right, and you've got a crap Obamacare policy that if you had to go out and buy it would cost you $1,200 a month. Okay, but it doesn't pay for anything until you fork up $7,500. All right. So I mean, the real cost of this thing, if you actually need medical care, is $20,000. Okay. Oh, by the way, the vast majority of things that can go wrong with you are less than that. However, the catastrophic ones are $250,000. Right. Yeah. So yeah. So the thing is that, you know, the options are either get bent over the table and pay a bunch of other people's bill, or gamble on not having one of the really ugly ones occur.
Now, you're just as an aside in terms of what people look at and let go. And I'm not one of these guys. We have some people on the show. I won't say his name's Carl. That expects that wants, you know, expects people to rise up and protest. And by the way, it's probably the only way you're going to get anywhere. I'm not disagreeing with that. But
well, other than shooting people.
But hell, what do you? You're teaching a lot of young people, and I get the letter, somebody's showing me, right? His letter from Social Security, right? So the guy or the lady shows me the letter, and this is 2 years in a row. You get the letter from the government, and they say, by the way, because of inflation, your Social Security benefits are going up 2.3%.
Right.
But by the way, the Medicare piece, which is pulled out of there, right?
Right.
That's up like 5.2 or 4.7.
That's going up 5.5, right?
And so, how do you? I think we have across the board fairly intelligent people in this country. How do you not look at that letter and almost either, I won't say get a gun or a water balloon or a a poster or a sandwich sign,
rotten tomato,
you know, or a rotten tomato or something, or at least reach for an air sickness bag? How do you just sit there and go, well, that's okay. it's not okay.
you know, that's the thing, Chief, is that the data is you know, it's in your face at the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's in your face when they do stuff like this, yeah. Right? And then, you know, but what's been filed now with most of the states, because at this point, most of the state insurance pools, all the different providers have filed their Obamacare stuff for next year. Okay, now it's in the process of the state insurance commissions doing their, you know, whatever. They are expecting, because of this cliff and the adverse selection problem it's going to produce, right? You're going to take somebody like myself who can have garbage insurance, so-called insurance. It's garbage, but it's $40 a month. You know what, on the possibility I get cancer over the next year, I'll pay that, right? Even though if I need to have an arm set or something like that, I can probably actually pay cash for it for less than...
You better find it. Not here in an emergency room.
Well, but I mean, but I'm just saying, well, no, not in an emergency, but I'm saying if I need something done and I'm mobile, I'm ambulatory or whatever have you, I can almost, I mean, I can go down to the surgery center in Oklahoma, well, west of here. I can go across.
Yeah, I've heard about
to,
that center.
Right,
Oklahoma.
So I mean, I can pay that. And it's less than I would pay in deductibles,
right, but
for many, yeah, of the things that I might need.
You guys read about the story about the guy needing a urology surgery? His hospital in Georgia priced him out at $40,000, and that was just for the hospital stay.
Right.
$40,000, and then he gets a price quote from that outfit you're talking about in Oklahoma. They don't accept third-party payments.
Right.
They just out of pocket.
Cash.
They quote him at $4,000, and he was, yeah, able to use that quote to renegotiate with Georgia to lower their price to $40,000. So I mean, if you really think about that price difference, a factor of 10, I've seen that factor of 10 before. When my brother Rod went and got his dental implants done in Los Angeles, Mexico, it cost him about $1,200. If he had done it in Northern Iowa, it would have cost him $12,000. So yep. I think that,
yeah, well, if you're in town,
that anecdote of 10 times, what it's saying is all these rules and regulations, licensing, con laws, all that stuff, all the cartelizing by the federal government does what to our medical cost? Probably increases them by at least a factor.
It increases the overhead.
You know, we had to mark.
Well, it's not just that. It's also that you're telling me I've got to pay the druggie's bill when he takes six OD rides in a day. All right. And oh, by the way, all of that, he doesn't have any money, nor does he have insurance. Somebody has to pay for that. All right. And, and what you, when you allow this kind of a structure to be put in place, what you do is you unbound the demand on the side of people who don't have to pay anything. All right, because there's no pushback, and there's also no pushback on price. So
lot of this goes. I mean, we're all talking about the same subject, and we got a dash here because we should have a show on it. Maybe the three of us talk about it because it comes down to like the overhead amount. I mean, if three druggies pile into Cook County, the emergency staff, they're all fixed. I mean, the variable cost.
Well, they're on salary,
The variable cost of that guy being in there is next to nothing, and yet.
Yeah, it's like an extra seat on.
But the overhead is dramatic, and
it's the pricing model in flying standby.
Well, I mean, the doctors are nowhere even close to being the highest paid people in the place now, which is really scary.
Yeah.
I got a real quick one, we got a dash. One of my buddies had, nobody won't know what happened to him, but I think he broke his ankle, and then when he fell, he put himself in ventricle fib.
Oh, that ain't good.
No, so it took him forever to get him to the hospital. He got him back, and it took like forever to, you know, he was out for without no oxygen for a while. But now he's fine. They did a great, you know. So we went to visit him in the rehab center at Northwestern. You guys would have loved this. You don't do anything on the first floor. You got to go to like the fifth floor. This is at the somebody.
We got a rehab.
Well,
injury.
But the fifth floor, it's a huge building. There's a desk with two people there. There's like four chairs and a table. That's it. On the entire floor.
Yeah.
And then you have to get another elevator to go up to the guy's room. And I'm thinking, how do you have a whole floor in a building like this with three people? And what kind of overhead is that?
Right.
I mean, what are we? I mean, it's astounding. These Taj Mahals that people are building themselves here. What percentage of the place is for patients? 25%?
Well, that just goes to show you that the government funding and the rules and regulations create these moral hazards. And you get this misallocation of resources. And that's why we need a market-based system.
Let's talk about, let's get Ricky right down what we need to talk about here. Because I was stunned when Katie was on talking about, you know, working on research in some of these hospitals. She was Northwestern. She was Minnesota. And she was Vanderbilt. If you and I, or the three of us, pony up, write $1 million check, for whatever disease, pick a disease, and there's a doctor there that's doing research on it, or a team of people, the amount of overhead that these places dump on that research, they might snag half of our $1 million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hell with that.
Yeah.
How many overhead?
Well, you see in education too. You see the same thing in education.
Well, the University of California, last time I checked, they had 10 indirect people to every professor, every teacher. That's kind of a lot.
Well, again, these aren't market-based systems. These organizations aren't disciplined by the market.
They could be.
They benefit from the monopoly positions that the government creates.
Well, they could be. Some of the stuff is. Anyway, we got to talk about next week. S&P futures up 27, Nasdaq futures up 114. There is no inflation. Just tell yourself that no matter what they say. Thank you, guys. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.